You're listening to The Polished Woman with Jessica Bunavach, only on LA Talk Radio.
Oh, happy Monday, Polished Women. Welcome to The Polished Woman Show. I love it when it's Monday because that's when I get to do my purpose and help you women out there. And I don't know what you've been, you know, going through the past few weeks or months or days, but I hope our day for today, because this is really a good story, what we're going to share with you. It's choosing to change course. So I think all of us have been stuck in a rut at some point, right? Maybe you were working a job that left you feel depressed. Maybe you were in a relationship where you didn't feel fulfilled. Maybe you were at a low point in your life when you just wanted something more. Sometimes it's easy to move past this, and other times it feels like we may never break free. So our guest for today, when I spoke to her, I said, oh my gosh, I said, you have to be on our show. Because I feel like she felt like, when I spoke to her, I felt like she was walking in circles, navigating a life that is not about her anymore. It's about, you know, everything is about the people around her, you know, her husband, her children, her family, her friends, and even, because she is a former dentist, even her patients. In fact, I think her whole life is all about her patients. And she stopped taking care of herself. She stopped taking care of what is good for her and what she thinks her purpose in life is. But she said something to herself that really ignited my thoughts. And I really am like, I want this beautiful women to hear this, all of you. So here today on our show, as we listen to her story, please welcome Negin Pepin. She is an author of 5 books. Oh my gosh, Negin, welcome to the Polished Woman Show. Hello.
Hi.
So many things that's happening in our world right now. And all we do is like pray for everyone. And pray for peace, you know, guys, pray for peace. But for now, I want to share with you a beautiful story that hopefully will inspire you and inspire you, all of women out there, about your story. Because I know a lot of women are actually in her situation right now. I used to be in your situation, by the way. And I know that, you know, I know I want them to hear your story. And I know that this will really encourage some of you women to maybe switch or shift into another course. There you go.
So I have to tell you, when you called me and we spoke, mm-hmm. I told you actually, I always find it so interesting when people tell me like that my story is inspiring.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like it's my story, you mm-hmm. know, and that it could be anyone's story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So telling you my story, it's kind of like, where do I start? What are we focusing on? But to understand me, you have to understand where I come from. So
yes.
I'm Persian, and mm-hmm. I am first generation. Mm-hmm. I'm the eldest, and I'm the only girl. So that's like a triple whammy in my culture.
Okay.
And, you know, it's interesting. We're a very rich culture, but mm-hmm. That being said, there is always an inherent difference between being a girl and being a boy.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
And
oh, my gosh.
Parents never really made me feel like, you know, like, oh, my brothers are more important. Never like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But there was just it was almost like an expectation that, you know, they have all these expectations for their children mm-hmm. and they want all these things. And with their sons, it was almost like it was their responsibility.
Yeah.
Those humans from you being expected to be that way.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Are they expecting you to be like, okay, you're just gonna be a wife and but
no.
you're gonna have a career? No.
Well, yeah. a lot of people in the culture do, but
yes.
no, not
yeah.
mine. My mm-hmm. mom is she is a fire. She's just fire.
Okay.
She's fierce. She's strong. Mm-hmm. She's the strongest person I know, and she doesn't take anyone's crap. And so, and my mom, you know, she struggled in the same ways that all of us first-generation Iranian women do here, mm-hmm. in the sense that we're trying to find a place between these two different worlds,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
This deep cultural, traditional world that our families come from, and this new, you know, independent American world.
Yeah.
So we have to find a gray in this black and white, and mm-hmm. it's really, really tough to do. Mm-hmm. And my mom, being even though that she came from the traditional side, she had that fire in her too. And she had no family here. Mm-hmm. And my father, when they got married, he left a few days later to come here and go to school, and they were apart for 2 years. And so when she came, she was essentially all alone.
Yeah.
And she had to teach herself to speak and all those things. But, mm-hmm. you know, that wasn't enough for her being just, you know, a mother
yeah.
or, you know, a housewife. She had a really successful daycare for years mm-hmm. while we were in school, so that would mm-hmm. allow her to be home with us and do that, but still have some sort of career. And then once we moved, she decided she was done with that. And my mom has been a respiratory therapist for about 2 decades now.
Oh.
And so she was studying science and things that I was studying at the same time
yeah.
as I was studying them, you know.
So that's so together. Cool.
And so she's always been a very determined person. And so my mom, one thing she told me from the beginning was, I don't want you to focus on getting a husband or learning how to do, you know,
I love that.
Housework or cooking or things like that. I can teach you all that when you find someone.
Yeah.
What I want for you is to have a career
yeah.
where you could stand on your own 2 feet
uh-huh.
And not depend on a man. Because she wanted my husband to be an addition to my life, not a necessity. And so that was something I was always raised with. My mom always put that in me. But, you mm-hmm. know, being from my culture, it's a joke that we all say, you know, they want you to be a doctor, an attorney, or an engineer. Like, those are the three, you know, golden tickets, right? And so so I never even really thought about mm-hmm. anything else. That
yeah.
was just always kind of put into me, right?
Yeah.
And then growing up, there was an entire creative aspect of my life
yeah.
like, that no, my family didn't really know about. I mean, I would write stories as young as I can remember,
yeah.
11, 12 years old, uh-huh. I'd write stories. And then when I was school, it was, I started writing songs,
yeah.
and then I got into a band,
yeah.
and I wrote, like, music, and we performed. And my family didn't actually know I could sing until I was almost 18 years old, senior in high school. Our band put on a concert, and my parents sat in the front row, and when we did an original ballad that I had written,
uh-huh.
they were bawling.
Oh my god.
Now, mind you, I would do concerts in my bedroom. I would, you know, we had this little garage converted in the back.
Uh-huh.
It had like a mirror in it, and I would dance and sing. And so I did all these things, but, you know, that was never something that was nurtured.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you that you can do these things.
Yeah.
But this can always be a hobby that you do on the side. Like, okay,
nah,
on the weekends.
Yeah.
You go to the hospital, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever. And
yeah.
so it was just this sort of, you know, thing
yeah.
that was just kind of like a hobby as far
yeah.
as anyone was concerned.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I did what a good Persian daughter does, and I studied really hard, and I
uh-huh.
got into USC Dental School,
uh-huh.
and I became a dentist. You know, and I did that for a long time. And a year before I graduated dental school, mm-hmm. I met my husband. I married my husband.
Okay.
I met him right before I started dental school, and then mm-hmm. I married him a year before I graduated. And a year after I graduated, I had my first son.
Okay.
So life just like started. I had to be a grown up all
yes.
right away. You know?
Right away. Yeah.
And it, you know, things got real. It was like, you know, being a wife, being a mother, being a daughter, being a sister, being a dentist, and it was these hats that just kept piling up on my head.
Yeah.
And to the point where I felt like I was almost a circus act,
mm-hmm.
standing there trying to keep these hats from falling over
mm-hmm.
and juggling knives at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it just, there was no space or room for me.
Yeah.
And I just gave and gave and gave. My job was giving, you know, my life was giving. Everybody needed something. And I had been told, you know, that I didn't know any different. And around my mid-30s, probably later 30s, because I'm 44 now, I started to feel suffocated.
Yeah.
Like, truthfully, I could not breathe.
Yeah.
It felt like someone was sitting on my chest. And I was having breakdowns, like, you know, crying and just unhappy and just, you know. Oh, and on top of that, my second son, when he was born, 18 months, he got really sick. And by 2 years old, he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. So then all of a sudden, being the mother of a chronically ill child was another hat on top of my head. And those years of trying to get him the right doctors, get him the right medicine, fighting everyone, you know, mm-hmm. to calling insurance. I mean, it was just a full-time thing. And it consumed me. And those were some really dark, dark years
where I didn't
know whether I was going to make it out of that. My marriage was going to make it out of that. Mm-hmm. I was going to have fun. Deals being made with mm-hmm. God. Lots of give that to me and take it from him. And it was a really, really hard time. Lots of guilt because mm-hmm. They're only 2 years apart. So I had two babies.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so as I spent all this time doing these things for my youngest, I was away from my oldest. And it was just, it was a nightmare for me. Mm-hmm. And my mother actually was my rock. That mm-hmm. woman, I can't do life without her. I can't do life without either of them.
Yes.
My father is a rock in a whole different way.
Yeah.
But in this particular situation, she held my hand. She spoke when I couldn't. She dealt with, I couldn't even speak to family, mm-hmm. calling to see how he was doing, because the next person that told me he was going to grow out of it, I was going to crawl through the phone and strangle. Do you know what I mean? And it was like my mom, just, I wouldn't have made it through that without her. But that was a really hard time for me as well. And so when I got to this point, it was just like there was nothing left in this world. And I told him, I said, I am suffocating. I can't breathe. I feel like I have nothing left for me. That I've lost who I am. I don't even know who I am.
Yeah.
You know? And I just want to get in the car and I want to run away. And I just want to go, right? Not that I would, but that's the feeling that I had, you know? And it was this random night. So we had some friends over, and we were outside talking, and I was telling a story about something that had happened. And one of my friend's husbands looked at me at the end of the story and said, Nagin, you should really write a book.
Yeah.
And I looked at him like, that's funny, right?
Yes.
And he was like, you know, no, you're a really good storyteller. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know it at the moment, but the days passed, and all of a sudden there was a seed that was planted, mm-hmm. and I started to feel this yearning, and I started to remember that I did these things before, right?
Yes, yeah.
There was this part of me. And a few weeks later, I decided to sit down. Right? Like, I didn't think anything of where it was going to go. Mm-hmm. And people always think my first book, Forbidden by Faith, is actually my story.
Your story.
It's not my story. It evolved, or it was triggered by just the basics of my story. So the characters in this book are both Iranian, and one is Jewish and one is Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so my husband, we're the same. So we're both Persian, but one of us was born Muslim or was born Jewish.
Yeah.
And that's a really big deal in my culture.
Yeah.
A little bit less so these days, but, you know, a couple decades ago, pretty, you know, big. And I was lucky because we didn't hit a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
Right? My in-laws are great, but I wanted to write. And so I just picked the first thing that
started
popped into my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, how could the story have gone, right?
Yeah.
And so I wrote the story, and I'm sure we're going to get into, but that evolved into books being published. But having that for me, this writing thing, is something that is just for me, right?
That's
it's mine.
So good.
It belongs to nobody else in my life. I can sit down and I can write these stories, and it was very therapeutic.
Yes.
Because, you know, they may not be our stories as authors that we write, but I believe that they come from experiences that we mm-hmm. have. Whether it's an emotion from an experience I grab onto, work into this situation that's happening, or an actual situation that may have happened or happened to someone or something. And so I do feel like a lot of us go into that. And so it was very cathartic. It was almost therapeutic for me to write these stories, right?
I love
it. And I'm so all about the feelings. Like, my stories will break your heart and stomp on it and make you cry. And I just love that. Like, because life is that.
Yeah.
Life is real. It's raw.
Yeah.
It's up. It's down. It's pain. It's happy. Is all of those things, right? And so that's what I put into my stories. But I think, you know, the fact that I have now, you know, pivoted my career as well, mm-hmm. I really do believe came from giving myself this space, right?
Yes.
Giving myself this thing where mm-hmm. I started to realize it doesn't have to only be about everybody else. So COVID actually is what created the scenario in which I changed my career.
Yes.
And I was a dentist for 15 years up until September. Mm-hmm. But I had been thinking about wanting to get out for a couple of years before that as well, but, you know, responsibility, you know, it paid the bills. It paid the bills nicely.
Yeah.
You know, it helped kept me from having to worry about my children, what they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did it, you know, I did that. But it was very, daunting and very difficult. Like, a couple of years back, it had started to have physical effects mm-hmm. on me, my back, my leg. I mean, it had gotten so bad that just 6 months ago, my chiropractor is also my friend, told me, if you don't do something, I'm going to see you in a wheelchair because your back is getting that bad. Because I worked at a very high fast-paced office.
Yeah.
So some offices see 8 people a day. We saw about 10 to 12 a morning.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's physically stressful in so many ways that people don't really realize in that, you know, field is a tough field. And so in September, when my assistant had to stay home with her children because she had lost her nanny to COVID, it was like the universe just pushed me out the door. Shut it. Right? Like, you're not going back, you know?
Yeah. Like a sign, somehow.
I've been thinking about it. There have been moments that I could maybe make a move, and I didn't, for fear, for comfort, being comfortable, and, you know, already knowing what was going on, you know, and doing something new was scary, you know? And so, but we lost, I lost my assistant, and the idea was that we were going to hire someone else, you know? I had been working with my boss for the whole 15 years, so he's not just my boss, he was my family.
Your
he
family,
was my
yeah.
best friend. Like, you know, we were just very, very close, you know? And, like, he, you know, and so he was like, Adam, we're going to find someone, but I just had this fear it wasn't going to happen. In someone's mouth, right? Like, how else could you get the pants? It's like right there, you know? And even though we're totally geared up and surprised we didn't get it, but still, you know, it's tough.
Yeah.
And so we couldn't find the assistant, and so I had to start to figure out what I was going to do. And the idea of going and applying and trying to work in a different office was just like, oh my God, anxiety was unbelievable. I couldn't, it was just, I just knew I didn't want to do that. So I had to figure it out. And, you know, being that specialized of a degree, like, people look at a dentist and they're going to be like, what else are you going to do? So I had to get creative. I had to find a way to
take those
skills I have from working with patients and the communication and the human resource aspect of it and all of that and turn around and try to apply it in other places. And I got lucky, you know, I think luck is a big thing. I think who you know is a big thing.
Yes.
I had certain people that were contacts in certain, you know, and I was able to get it was just a matter of trying to overlap skills and trying to prove that I could do things, you know? And then then the universe just said, God said, this is it. This is what you're going to do. And so now I work for Motion Picture.
That is so amazing.
Yeah, so, but it was finding the ability to realize that I could do something for myself that I think opened up this space for me to realize I can make a change.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to hear this. I want to hear what is that, you know, what inspired you actually to make that significant change? I mean, what, I love this. Okay, I want you to say that phrase that she told me, actually. She told me this phrase that, oh my gosh. I said, okay, I'm going to keep this. And I actually put it on my note. And I was like, okay, that really touched me. And I think you have to, you know, share that to everyone.
So,
during the time that you were really, really, you were like, oh my gosh, this is not me anymore. Where am I? Who am I? Like, everything is about the people around me. It's not, when am I going to give myself a time? And then you were like, you know, going through the rock bottom.
Right. And you asked me what kept me from drowning. Mm-hmm. And I just said that it really wasn't the time to drown. Because look, life is hard, right? Everybody's got hard things. And I don't think my hard things are harder than anyone else's. But up until that point, I had been dealing with a sick child. Mm-hmm. I had been dealing with what that effect was on my relationship with my husband, with my family, all that kind of stuff. I had lost someone who was very close to me, I told you this, in my mid-20s, who was like my person. He was my cousin, but he was my I call him my soulmate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were so many things I had to deal with. I felt like I was drowning, but I don't think I ever thought I was going to drown. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that, you know, because you just can't drown. What is the alternative? What are you going to do?
You said it wasn't time yet.
Yeah, it wasn't time to drown. It wasn't. Yeah. And it just, you just can't. You just can't. Because what is the alternative? I couldn't do it. I had kids depending on me. I didn't want them to see that. I wanted my children to see that they could get up. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get up. And so I know it's hard to get up, and I don't really know what gave me the strength to do it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I just did it. Because finding myself felt a lot easier than dealing with my sick child or mm-hmm. dealing with a death of someone I'm never going to see again. You know, I thought I could maybe do something about this. You know, it's all in me, right? And mm-hmm. I'm the keeper of me. And so yeah. maybe I can find something in me mm-hmm. to get me out of this. It was survival.
Yeah. And mind you, from being a dentist to writing a book, I mean, how did you even discover, like, okay, I can actually write? Because somehow you said you can sing and you can do other things. What made you, like, you know, switch from being this and then not even think of, well, wow, I can also sing. What, like, right away to writing? And guess what? Not just writing. She did not self-publish. She was actually very, very lucky and blessed that she got three contracts, right?
Two contracts, and they're both for
with a publishing company.
Yeah, two different publishing companies, and I have an agent.
Yeah,
and so yes, you know, because part of the writing, the singing, it was the writing part of it. The putting my feelings into words mm-hmm. that has always been appealing to me. You mm-hmm. know, I did that all my life, so it was second nature. Once I let myself have that moment, I just do it.
Yeah,
and it feels the same. So like a poem is a condensed version. You spread it out a little bit, those feelings. I got a song, you spread that out a little bit, and then uh-huh. you got a story.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was just this progression, and I don't know, I just did it. I really didn't think I was going to get to the point where they were published. I just thought, I need to do something.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that is, to pour my feelings into uh-huh. that maybe are just 2 hours in a day that are mine. And it just...
Can I ask for somebody who wants to be a writer or to... you know, to write a book, how did you start this whole process?
So I wrote it.
Yeah, because it takes a while.
It took me a year, faster. But I wrote it, and then one of my sister-in-laws, she was trying to write some children's books, so she's uh-huh. really good about researching and figuring everything out. So once I finished the book, mm-hmm. she was like, okay, so I was like, okay, well, will you read it? And she was like, yeah, so she read it and she did some edits.
Yeah.
Then I was like, okay, and now what do I do? And I started to dive into different writing communities. Mm-hmm. So Twitter's a really big writing community on there that she had told me about, and so I started to make writer friends.
Oh,
and honestly, right now, some of my closest friends are my writer friends I've never met in real life.
What?
But we talk on the phone and FaceTime and text, and they are literally my go-tos at this point. Like,
no.
We are just planning trips to meet each other. But because we're across the country. But, you know, because we're in the same sort of thing, we do a lot of, you know, overlapping. So once I had my little writing community, they become what are called critique partners. And so as you write, you switch things around, and everyone reads, and they do like heavy edits and tell you, like, this, you know, there's storyline edits, and then there's different types of edits. And so we all do that for each other.
But that's a good way of finding friends as
Twitter.
Well.
If you want to be an author, get on Twitter and look up the writing community. It's literally hashtag writing community. And it becomes...
Oh, my gosh.
So Twitter's also where I got my agent, by the way.
What?
And it's also where I got my second contract,
Wait,
so,
what?
Yeah, so Twitter.
So this is all on Twitter.
Yeah, it's all on Twitter. Twitter does a lot of writing competitions.
Yeah.
And they're called like Pit Mad, or, you know, there's all these different names for it. And so there's one that was called the Diversity Pit, and I get to do it because I'm a diverse author, as well as I have diverse characters. Now, if you're one or the other, so you know, they want diverse stories. The publishing community is looking for more diverse stories. And so, you know, I did that, and I ended up getting my agent and then one of the publishing houses, Entangled, for my second series, which only has one book out now. The second one's coming, and then there will be a third. They found me off that as well and offered me a contract. So, yes, if you want to be a writer, honestly, I'd say go to Twitter. You also do have to take it with a grain of salt because a lot of drama happens on Twitter, so just ignore it. That's not important. But, yeah, that's where I found a lot of my critique partners, a lot of my... our author friends, you know, there's a lot of conventions before COVID. The summer before COVID, I went to a convention in New York, a romance writers one. It was amazing. So when these, you know, these conventions start again, do those. They're so fun. You get to meet them in real life. I got to meet half of my author friends in real life. We spent all week together. It was amazing.
Wow. I didn't even know that you can, you know, you can have like a community and
a
writing community.
I didn't know until my sister-in-law turned me on to it. And so I did that. And then my author friends, I learned what the steps were and how to do it. And so you have to write a particular type of letter called a query letter. You have to have a synopsis of your book, and you send it out to author, agents and publishing houses, and then you cross your fingers. And get ready, because there are a ton of people that are going to reject you, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
And that is okay, because it's not about...
Was it easy for you?
No.
No.
Okay. No, I would have... I mean, thank God for my author friends.
Yeah.
Honestly, I almost threw in the towel 10,000 times along the way, because I was like, oh, I suck. Nobody wants this. This story sucks. Forget it. You know, and it was them who had been in it a little bit longer than me who were like, no, this is just your stripes. Keep going, you know?
Oh, my
and
God.
Eventually, now, in hindsight, I realized I actually got my first contract very quickly. I only had to...
You're so lucky.
I have to stop saying luck.
I know.
There's a lot of luck. There's a lot of timing, a lot of universe happening, a lot of God, all those things. You know, but everyone has a time, and you know. And
I love that you love God. I love that you're a believer. Wait, so how about your family? I mean, was your husband? You know me, I'm very pro marriage. Was your husband more like? I mean, he was excited about the get to spend more time with him,
so,
and then the kids and the family. Like,
so
how was that?
He wasn't. I mean, he was excited for me this time around. When I was originally thinking about changing careers a couple of years ago, I think he was a little more nervous. Because, you know, it's a two-income household.
Yeah.
You know, we're partners.
Yeah.
In my house, we both are 50-50, you know? And so we work hard to give our kids the life that they have.
Uh-huh.
And so I think he was a little nervous about what that would look like, you know? But yeah, he's totally excited about this for me. He's, you know, he can see the light, like that I'm so much less stressed out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's new and it's scary and
sure,
there's like the stress of learning it all.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's just different because if I don't have to, you know, everything I do is going to affect another human being. And that's a really big responsibility to have on you that people every single day. So
it's so funny because I actually have someone that I'm close to and she's a doctor, but she always like complains like, I really love my job. I really want this, but I wish I'm doing something else. You know, like I'm going to have her watch this one and say, hey, look at this girl. Like literally from being a dentist, she's a doctor too. And, you know, switching to a new one. But okay. So if someone is out there like watching right now and she feels very, you know, like down and like, how can I do this? I don't know anything. You know, I'm just a mom. You know, there's a lot of them out there. I'm just a mom. How can I take care of, you know, three kids and then work at the same time? You know, and, you know, telling me that I'm going to give up this, you know, like not really give up the kids, but give up a little bit of time for, you know, for my kids and doing what somehow I want that will make me happy.
You know, my advice would be that you deserve it.
I love
that. You deserve some time. You know, it takes a long time. Look, I come from a culture that is all about giving of yourself to your family. And it creates these amazing families. Don't get my five people in the family I was born in, my parents and my brothers, we are fierce army. Like, that's what it feels like to me. We face nothing alone. Mm-hmm. And there is always this feeling of support and like, I will never actually fall. My father will figure out how to fix anything for me.
Yeah.
You know, he, or for all of us, he's, you know, they're just both super supportive. My brothers are just, I am so blessed. I always say, and I always tell them, I do not know what I did in my last life, but whatever it was, God really thought I deserved this because my family is amazing. And so, yeah, it's super important. But at the same time, you're super important. And if you can't have an identity, then you can't be your best version for anyone else. So there are sacrifices that have to be made. There is a little time that you have to give up. There is, you know, a lot of work you've got to put in. And the idea of not knowing anything, I think that's crap. That's not true. There's always something in your day-to-day, whatever that is, whether it's a career, being a stay-at-home mom or whatever, that overlaps with something else. I mean, you can do it. There is a way to figure that out. You have to have confidence. You have to, you know, just go out there. I mean, what is the worst that's going to happen if you did try to, you know, get another job?
Yeah.
What's going to happen? They're going to say no.
But do you believe, though, that timing is important?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. This was not a move I would have made when my children were younger.
Yes.
This is not a move I would have made, you know, when we were not financially stable. You know, this was not a move I would have made. And you know what? That's just life. Sometimes you just can't do it when you want to do it. So find a littler thing to find your own, you know, identity. Like, for me, writing yes, it's a career that doesn't pay that well. Just FYI, you're trying to get a job. Unless you're like a, it's not, but it was something for me that I could do at the same time as all the other things I was doing that just let me find myself a little bit. So whatever that is, do it. You deserve it. You get that hour or that 2 hours or that, you know, couple days a week or whatever. You just for yourself.
Yeah. I love that you said that.
Things. You got to find the little things until you can do the big thing.
I love that you said that, that this is something that you own.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you did it. You did it by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, this is so wonderful. Now I know that you're in a motion picture. Okay. Like talking about switching now an author and then now in a motion picture, right? So yeah. Now you have a different, totally different career.
I have a
now
totally different career. Yeah, I do. And again, a
yeah,
luck,
yeah,
you know, a mutual contact, mm-hmm, timing, and I'm not sure. I'm super excited about it. I'm not gonna question it. And yeah, so now I'm the director of special projects for one of the departments of motion picture. And
I love it.
Yeah, it's a newer position that was created for me, and it allows me to be creative.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm figuring it out as I go, but
wow,
it's super exciting, yeah.
It's now you're using the art in you,
yeah,
the artistic part,
absolutely,
the creative,
yes,
part in you. This is a very, very good question that I want to ask for. How important was wanting or needing something new in your desire to make a change in your life?
This is
really important, yeah.
It wasn't a desire, it was a necessity. I think a lot of times, mm-hmm, we go into survival mode, right? Because it's hard being a woman, it's hard being a mom, it's hard being a wife. It's just, you know, we're in this world where
they think it's easy, you know?
No,
it's not.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're in this world where we're expected to do something fabulous with ourselves,
yeah,
and have careers, but at the same time, we're expected to be a mom and take care of everything. And
yeah.
So, you know, like, we're not held to the same standards as men are. And so it's a lot. And I think that it was a necessity. It was something that just had to happen, like, mm-hmm, breathing for me. If I didn't do it, I may not have gotten out of that. I may not have been able to pick myself back up. Like, I had,
yeah,
to grab onto something, you know.
I love this whole thing, you guys. You know, I know a lot of you, maybe a couple of women out there, are feeling like, you know what, I'm done. Like, I'm done with life. And, you know, how many people are like having suicidal thoughts? And we're losing a lot of women, actually.
Yeah.
And even in my country, who does not actually believe in this much. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just interviewed a friend of mine who her son just committed suicide as well. And they just thought that it's the end, that they can't do anything else. You know, that it's okay, just end, you know, ending our life and everything is like the answer. But it's not. You know, you have so much purpose that you can actually do here on Earth. And I believe that each one of us have something, like some sort of like a purpose, and not just like the whole, not just, of course, taking care of your family, being a mom and being
absolutely
a wife. It's like a, you know, that's your number one purpose. But
yeah,
there is somehow out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I actually believe a lot in energy. And
yeah,
I think, you know, I try to be very in tune. So like I can feel my energy connect with another human being,
mm-hmm,
and it'll be, I mean, from all walks of life, it's not just like, you know, it can be, I feel this connection. And I think there's a purpose in this connection for me. I'm going to be someone for them, or they're going to be someone for me.
Yes.
And whether it's just that one conversation, mm-hmm, or a friendship or a long, you know, whatever it
yeah
is. But I do believe that's what this life's all about. It's all about making, mm-hmm, those connections. It's all because, you know, there's, it really depends on what you believe. I believe there's somewhere else. This isn't the stopping point. This is just
yeah
the train station. And so for me, I think that our purpose is to make those connections. And in those connections, we help each other in ways that we may not even know we're doing. And then that's your purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's your purpose is to do that.
Oh my gosh, that's so, I cannot believe it's already like 30 minutes. Wait, before I ask her the last advice, I want to show, okay, can we show your book?
Yes.
Oh
yes,
my
yes
gosh.
Faith is the first, and then you've got Destiny and Time. And essentially, the characters from these go into having their own stories in these.
Uh-oh.
And they're all about all my this one is set to music. This is my romance rock star series. This is the first in this one. The second one is coming. It's called Guard Her Heart.
Uh-huh.
And then there'll be a third. And they all have Iranian women as their main characters. And they're all first generation. I wanted to... The reason I wrote these stories is because I wanted to show a light on my culture in a different way, right? Mm-hmm. So you only ever see us in movies and... you know, out in the world as these bad people, right? Like the terrorists.
No, oh my
and
God.
You see us also...
My therapist, by the way, is an Iranian.
Yeah. Us, you know, you see stories set in the Middle East and the countries that we come from. And I wanted people to set their way amongst all these different things, trying to be, you know, in the new, you know, the new age, at the same time as still holding on to our traditions. And all the troubles that the women see, it's really tough to be an Iranian woman trying to figure it out. And so all of these books are essentially that. They're literally some Iranian woman trying to find her way through.
Oh, I love that.
Get independence, you know.
Get independence. It's so hard to be to move to a foreign country not knowing any, you know, not knowing anybody like your mom. I mean, can you hug your mom for me? Because I'm like, same thing. I moved here not knowing English is my second language, not knowing anybody. I mean, I have my kids and husband, but it's like really tough. It took me a while.
Yeah.
But
now
I'll
be the daughter of someone who had to deal with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's hard. Oh my God, that is so hard.
You're stuck in this trying to figure it all out.
Yeah. Okay. And you were three advice for them to take home for today.
Three. Okay. I am going to, say, first of all, I'm like everybody else. I don't really think I did anything spectacular that no one else could do. I think you all can do that. So I would say you're worth it. You deserve it. Take a moment, even if that's a small little thing, and find what that lifeboat is for you and start. It's the small things that will accumulate that will become big and will make you find yourself again. As women, I think we really need to find ourselves. I think have a voice. So when things feel like they're too much and too heavy, whoever your person is, whether it's your spouse, your family member, a friend, find someone to confide that in so that you don't feel like you're carrying that load all alone. Hang in there because this isn't it. We've got more things to do and more people to touch and become, you know, a part of their life. And you are definitely important, so don't ever forget that.
Yeah, that's so good. Remember, she said, it's not your time yet. So girls, ladies, it's never, remember that it's not too late to decide what you want to do for you, for yourself. It's never too late.
Never.
Even if you're like 50 years old, even if you're like 60 years old, oh my gosh, it's never too late. Find something that it's different in your life that will make you happy. It's actually for you. My God, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Here, can we all cheers? And please, everyone, can we pray for peace for our world? And please don't forget to give love to the next person that you see after watching and listening to our show. Thank you so much, Polish Women. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Polished Woman with Jessica Bunavach, only on LA Talk Radio.